You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly news podcast. This episode is being recorded on Thursday, the 11th of April, and this week we're talking about residency permits for children after two high-profile cases produced different outcomes. We've got an interview with a human rights expert concerned about what's happening with the rule of law in Sweden. And 50 years on from ABBA's breakthrough Eurovision victory, we'll ask our panelists to explain the group's enduring success. For Membership Plus subscribers, we'll look at new plans from the government to retain foreign students and researchers. And why do the far-right Sweden Democrats want to put a stop to a form of Swedish spoken in the poorer suburbs of Sweden cities? We'll chat briefly about the welcome return of a satirical TV show and why the new party Folklistan are making so many headlines. And finally, we'll discuss a new plan to improve the country's image abroad after a difficult year for brand Sweden. I'm your host, Paul O'Mahony, and I am joined in Stockholm by The Local's publisher, James Savage. While on the line from the Malmo studio, we have our Nordic editor, Richard Orange. And we've got a lot to cover, so I suggest we just get straight into it. So let's talk first about Murhaf Hamid, the boy who raised more than 5 million kroner for charity last year through the sale of Mayflower pins for My Blomman, an organization that combats child poverty. So just to recap briefly, his sales really took off when he got massive online support after it emerged that he had faced racist comments from adults while selling the pins. Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson backed him, and he later received a diploma from Queen Sylvia for his fundraising efforts. Richard, can you tell us a bit more about Murhaf Hamid and why he was back in the news this week?
Well, he's a 12-year-old boy from a place called Glimåkra, which is a tiny town in the far north of Skåne, kind of quite near Älmhult, where Akira is. And last year, he became the centre of this incredibly feel-good story in Sweden, because the amount he raised is like a massive record. I mean, no one's ever raised anything close to that for the charity before. And it came as a result of a social media campaign. So he had gone out to the local town centre and was going around. Just to explain what My Blomma is, it's kind of like a kind of half charity and half child labour, because they send out all of these 11-year-olds with these little bags that they hang around their necks that display all of these kind of lapel pins and stickers you can buy. It's a really old charity. It's been going on since 1907. And people buy these lapel pins, and then the money goes mostly to child charities that the charity runs. But also the sellers themselves, these 11-year-olds, get to keep 10% of their earnings, which is, you know, can be, in Murhaf's case, is 500,000 kroner or more. So it's a huge amount of money. And he went out into his local town centre and was apparently getting, you know, some racist treatment and being told to move on. And, you know, normally people would go, oh, it's sweet, you know. But because he's got an Ethiopian background, they reckoned he was treated differently. And a friend of her mother's, who's a bit of a campaigner, posted about this on Instagram, and it went absolutely viral, and it got picked up by the Sydsvenskan newspaper, and then it got picked up by all the other newspapers. And as a result of that, you know, because millions and millions of people just swished huge amounts of money to him. So that's what happened. Anyway, the news now is that he has got residency in Sweden. So when he was doing it, he'd been living as a kind of paperless. His parents don't have residency. I think they've been living in Sweden for 12 years or something. And now, finally, they've got residency. And the reason his law firm said, who released this information on the weekend, was that he had demonstrated a stark and Knutning, a strong link to Sweden, partly, I assume, as a result of this My Blommor story.
Yeah, it was a really nice end to that story, because when he was interviewed last year, he was asked what he would spend the money on. He said, you know, I'd like to be able to buy a residency permit, but obviously I can't. His family have finally got to stay here, as you say. But another story attracting a lot of attention in Sweden this week surrounds a 9-year-old girl called Lisa. More than 100 complaints have been submitted to the Justice Ombudsman in the past month after the Swedish Migration Agency ruled to deport the girl to Albania. James, can you give us some more background on this story and how it's been playing out in recent days?
Well, it's a pretty heartbreaking case, really. Lisa, who, as you said, is 9 years old, she was born in Sweden. She's lived here for most of her life. She has Albanian parentage. She currently lives with foster parents in Lidköping, who've known her since she was one, when she and her Albanian mother were temporarily placed with them. But she's been deported once before and then came back to Sweden with her mother in 2020. Now, Lisa's foster parents, Paulina and Hans Bäckström, have been refused the right to adopt her. They applied and were turned down. However, the mother no longer has custody. She doesn't live in Sweden. She doesn't live in Albania. And the father is out of the picture. So she's going to get deported back to Albania, where she will likely end up in a children's home.
Mm.
But fundamentally, the migration agency says she doesn't have the right to be here. Being born in Sweden, unlike in some other countries, being born in Sweden doesn't necessarily give you any right to citizenship or residency. As you said, the agency has been reported to the parliamentary ombudsman, JO, but it feels something of a campaign, 100 reports to JO. I think it's some kind of campaign to give Lisa the right to stay in Sweden, but you know, the parliamentary ombudsman can overrule or can judge that the migration agency has acted wrongly in a very narrow set of circumstances if it hasn't followed the law. But the ombudsman is there to make sure that all public agencies follow Swedish law. So that's one avenue that her supporters are pursuing, but it's a very narrow path to success there. And there's also another case that's being appealed to the Supreme Court about whether the Bäckströms should be allowed to adopt her. So it really, I mean, once things are being appealed to the Supreme Court, there's a very small chance of success there. So it's not looking very positive for Lisa.
No. And there have been like huge street protests for her to be allowed to stay in Sweden.
There have been huge street protests. There are a lot of people who are very upset by what's happening to her. And this is, I think, just one of many, many examples of Sweden's, you know, now pretty strict laws around migration that are very strictly applied as well. And there's very little room for making exceptions in heartbreaking cases.
Mm.
I think these, you know, there are many, many of these cases that don't even get into to the public consciousness every day.
Okay, thanks for that roundup. And we'll return to residency permits later when we look at a new inquiry tasked with making Sweden more attractive for foreign students, doctoral students and researchers. I just want to mention before we move on that we will be recording the podcast in front of a live audience on the 24th of April at the offices of Stockholm Business Region as part of the Talent Talks event being held there that day. And there are still some spaces available if you'd like to attend. And we'll add a link to the episode notes where you can sign up. Earlier this morning, I was joined in the studio by Jon Stauffer, who's the legal director with the human rights organization Civil Rights Defenders, to talk about a new rule of law report released by the Civil Liberties Union of Europe, which shows Sweden regressing in multiple areas. Long-time listeners might remember that we had the same guest on the podcast shortly after the 2022 election to talk about the TIDA agreement, a policy program signed by the government and the far-right Sweden Democrats that he said undermined the rule of law and democracy. Since then, the government has been rolling out some of the controversial policies laid out in the agreement. And this month, for example, will see police given the right to implement stop and search zones in vulnerable areas, allowing them to search people and vehicles without concrete suspicion that a crime has been committed. Let's hear what Jon Stauffer had to say about the Liberties Rule of Law report.
To summarize it generally, I would say that we see a regression, a clear regression in Sweden when it comes to different aspects of rule of law from perspectives such as the justice system, looking at civic space, enabling environment for civil society, and also looking at systemic human rights issues.
And what's this regression like in relation to other countries? Is there more regression in Sweden compared to elsewhere, for example?
I would say what we can see is that when liberties then look at the reporting from the different member states, we can see that old democracies also are regressing when it comes to rule of law. And that is something fairly new in the European context. And Sweden stands out as one of these old democracies where we see a regression, a negative trend when it comes to rule of law, human rights. So that is quite clear. You know, we've seen this regression in other countries, you know, for a number of years, such as Poland and Hungary. But now we see it also in countries like Sweden.
And what's the explanation for that, do you think?
That's really hard to say, you know, the explanation for that and the underlying reasons for this. But I think it's fair to say that the developments that we've seen in other countries are now, you know, coming to countries like Sweden as well. So it's a global phenomenon as well, and also European phenomenon that we've been, you know, haven't seen that clearly here until, you know, the past maybe a few years.
And how would you characterize those developments?
I would say that the developments in general is about, you know, human rights is not seen as, it's not high up on the agenda. So compliance with international human rights standards is not of such importance anymore as it maybe used to be. Other priorities exist that are seen as more important. Currently, you know, we have problems with criminality, gang criminality, shootings, and to kind of address those problems is of prime concern, and that is, you know, more important than adhering to human rights standards when doing that.
That was Jan Stauffer from Civil Rights Defenders giving an overview of the state of the rule of law in Sweden, according to the new Civil Liberties Union of Europe report. And Membership Plus subscribers will be able to hear the rest of that interview on Wednesday as we look in more detail at each of the areas where the report indicated that Sweden is regressing.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A few days ago, on the 6th of April, exactly 50 years had passed since four Swedes called Agneta, Benny, Björn and Anni-Frid won the Eurovision Song Contest in Brighton with Waterloo. They went on to make a string of giant hits. They were the human face of spandex. They were bigger than spiders in Australia. Then both couples that made up the band divorced and ABBA broke up in 1982. But just when they might have been expected to fade from public consciousness, the Mamma Mia film brought them right back into the limelight. And as we speak, there are creatures in London called avatars that I still don't fully understand. So I'd like to start there, if I may. James, you are a big fan and you've been to the ABBA Arena in London. What the disco happens in there?
Well, first of all, half the gays of Stockholm turn up. Because I went there, I knew about 20 people from Stockholm, and it was all the gays turned up, taking the trip over to see them. It's basically, it's in some weird back street in East London. They have built an entire arena where they basically run an ABBA concert every night of the week. It is obviously not a real ABBA concert. The real members of ABBA are sitting at home in Stockholm, and their younger selves are standing on the stage in the form of, I think it's not technically holograms, but basically holograms. Mm. Avatars, they call them. It almost looks like they're really standing there. It almost sounds like they're really singing. There is some kind of slightly stilted banter between them, between songs. So it's like going back in time to an ABBA concert in the 70s, nearly. I mean, a couple of glasses of wine and you'll almost believe it.
And does it look like they're moving about on the stage?
Yes. I mean, you know, with some limitations. But basically, yes, it looks like they're moving around on the stage.
And the ABBA members themselves, or Björn and Benny at least, were heavily involved in the conceptualization behind this, right?
They were all heavily involved in the production. Mm. They stood and they had little electrodes attached to them so that they could record their movements, even though obviously the avatars on stage are moving like much younger people. So I think that was partly just PR. But, you know, they were all involved in it. And they recorded also a whole load of new songs to coincide with the launch of this. So it was a really big deal. And, you know, I think what it's done is it's been a wake-up call for the whole music industry that this is an opportunity not just for ABBA, but for other stars, you know, to potentially in the long run be in places where they're not and make money from concerts where they don't even have to turn up. A lot of very big stars are seeing this as something that they can also perhaps invest in for the future. And also, you know, you can retire like ABBA does. I mean, they don't want to go out and sing. So, you know, this way they can bring the money in and do it from the comfort of their own homes.
And you've been an ABBA fan pretty much all your life, haven't you?
Yes. There's a picture of me at the age of 6 holding up an ABBA tape with earphones on my ears. And yeah, I fell for ABBA at an incredibly young age. I've always loved them.
What is it that makes them so special, do you think?
So much. It's interesting. Someone I met the other day had just met Björn Ulvaeus, and he had asked them the question, it's like, why really? Why do all the gays love ABBA? And there is something in it, but of course it's not just the gays. I mean, they are one of the biggest musical phenomenons still. I mean, you know, they not only do they manage to fill a concert venue in London night after night after night for years on end. They also manage to still be selling tickets to Mamma Mia the musical, Mamma Mia the party in Stockholm. People are still listening to their music on Spotify in enormous numbers. And I think it's a mixture of things. There is the music is fantastic. The melodies are extremely catchy. Some of them are very good dancing tunes. They're very good to sing along to. And they have this lovely kind of combination of often quite upbeat music with quite melancholy lyrics. Mm. And I think there's also this double fascination that you're always looking at it thinking, well, how much of this is them singing about their own lives? Just that looking at how, for instance, you get to The Winner Takes It All, which is one of their last tracks. This is music and text written by Björn and Benny, sung primarily by Agnetha, about a divorce. Mm. At the time that the couples in ABBA, Björn and Agnetha and Annie Fried and Benny, had sort of just divorced. So, and this is an ex-husband writing songs for the ex-wife to sing about divorce. It's so strange and so, but also so beautifully done. So I think on all of these levels, it's kind of works. And then you add, as you were talking about, the spandex, the great clothes, the crazy, so the kind of out there outfits. And you've got a wonderful kind of combination. And the whole Swedishness about thing as well, you know, they look so Swedish. They kind of have this, perhaps this openness about divorce is part of the Swedishness about it as well. And so I think, you know, you put all these things together and it's an almost unbeatable combination. And they are, I think, after the Beatles, the biggest selling group in history still.
Mm. Richard, can I bring you in here? Are you as big a fan, or where do you stand on ABBA?
No, I'm not. But I do recognise a lot of what James has said, in that in terms of melody and in terms of song structure and in terms of lyrics and in terms of just sheer performance, I mean, they are special. There's no doubt about it. And there's no doubt that especially Benny Andersson, who's the kind of musical mind behind it, is some kind of songwriting genius. I mean, there's a, you know, I went on the internet and looked at,
you know, music geeks talking about the song structure. And they had like, you know, there's reams of stuff you can write about ABBA. It's actually quite progressive musically and does lots of strange things that you don't normally get in pop music. But having said that, for me, it doesn't, it's just not funky. It doesn't, for me, it just has, if you listen to the rhythms, it's just din 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 din, or it's ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. I can't really explain it, but it doesn't have that kind of funk thing that you get from music with a kind of black origin in the US, like blues and funk and some jazz and New Orleans music, which is what really floats my boat, basically. I like to have that kind of rock and roll element, and ABBA's completely European, really. Even though it's disco without the funk. It's disco with the funk stripped out. And I went on this Musicians in Malmo Facebook page to try and puzzle out what it is that it doesn't have that I like to have in music. And people were saying that it's the beats. Like, the beats in ABBA are absolutely on the beat, absolutely metrical. And even if it's syncopated, it's syncopated in a kind of European style. It's not like a kind of a jazz drummer who, or like the Rolling Stones drummer, will always be slightly behind the beat, which gives it this kind of laid back feel. So anyway, somebody said that ABBA's drums are, they said, impressively sterile. And and I do kind of feel that it doesn't have that, what comes from kind of black dance music from the US. It doesn't have that rock and roll thing. It's very Swedish and Schlager oriented disco. And for me, I look back to when I was at university, and I remember that when Dancing Queen came on the dance floor at the sort of crappy £1 a pint disco we used to go to, I just found I couldn't dance. I don't know. I mean, and I'm sure James can dance to ABBA, but but I can't, I mean, for some reason. Yeah. And
I think ABBA on the dance floor is for people who like to go on the dance floor with their friends and sing at each other. That's how you basically dance to ABBA. For most of their songs, you don't really dance that much. You might swing each other around the dance floor and drunkenly chant. That's kind of how it works, and that's why it's a great wedding song. And a lot of their other music is best listened to kind of on your own, I think, and not for dancing, but more for sort of contemplating life.
And the Eurovision Song Contest takes place in Malmö next month, and there's been a lot of speculation that the four members could be coaxed into making their first live performance together since 1982. And Björn and Benny have completely ruled it out in interviews, but that hasn't stopped the rumours. Do you think there's any chance it will happen?
No. I mean, God, no. I mean, look, ever since they broke up, and so we're talking 40 years ago plus.
Yeah.
Ever since they broke up, we've had speculation almost annually about the ABBA getting together again and doing a live performance. It's not going to happen. They don't want to do it. They've said many, many times, we want people to remember us as young people. That's very important for them. And then they're getting older and older. Obviously, you know, they're sort of in their late 70s, 80s now. And secondly, certainly the women in ABBA, and I think Agnetha in particular, really don't really like doing live performances, have never really liked doing live performances. And they don't need it. So why would they do it? It's not going to happen, but people love speculating.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.